The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, continuing this conversation about the teaching, the Buddhist teaching on not self, last week there was a question around bringing a kind of a compassion to this exploration around self, because one of the main ways that we've been talking about exploring or kind of getting into understanding not self, and this is true in many areas of Buddhism, but we understand the wholesome qualities or the beautiful qualities, or we understand the way we understand something is by looking at what gets in its way. And so the way we can understand, the way we begin to understand the teaching of not self is by getting really familiar with what we think of as self, how we identify, how we constrict there, how we believe ourselves to be a somebody. So the question came up as I was talking about it, because often our senses of self, not always, but often our senses of self are kind of connected with areas of struggle, ways that we get constricted. For myself, one of the big areas of selfing was around self-hatred. And that was a very painful identity. Miserableness, another very painful identity. But it's helpful too to also notice that there can be counterposing identities. So for instance, along with that self-hatred identity, the identity that thought I was no good, I was a failure, was this kind of identity that I occasionally kind of hooked onto, which was, I can do this. I'm maybe the best meditator in the room. Or, you know, so there was this kind of flip side of the identities. And this may happen. It doesn't always happen, but it can be interesting if there's a particular flavor of an identity you see often to check and see if there's kind of the counterpoint identity to it. And you might find that one of the identities is preferable. So I certainly preferred it when I felt like I was successful, when I felt like I was doing well. What I discovered in this kind of exploration of this back and forth was, you know, I felt like the problem was in the side of the identity around self-hatred, that was what had to go away, that what I was supposed to feel all the time was to feel like I was successful, like I was good at things. And what I discovered was that identity of feeling like I was good at things was a need. It was a kind of an ideal that was a setup, because I couldn't always feel like I was successful. And so the kind of opening to that side, opening to the side of seeing, this is the identity of feeling like I'm successful. That was helpful, because then I could start to see how these two played off of each other. And so we start to see what I talked about in terms of the compassion piece last time, the question that I started with here is bringing compassion to this exploration. It's useful to recognize the conditionality, you know, that these identities are often conditioned, always conditioned. And in my case around the self-hatred, part of the conditioning was the setup of feeling like I always had to be successful. So then seeing this back and forth, seeing this weaving back and forth, helped there to be a little bit more compassion around the side of the self-hatred. So there's a lot more to explore in that terrain of what I was just talking about, exploring identities, but I want to speak a little bit more about the compassion side, just for a couple of minutes. So we can bring some compassion. Somebody asked, how can we bring compassion to this exploration of our identities? And that's one piece around recognizing that these identities, especially the ones that are suffering, especially the identities, like for me, the identity of self-hatred, you know, I didn't decide to grow up having that identity. You know, I didn't choose it. It was conditioned. It came because of a whole host of conditions that I actually began to understand and see, including conditions of prior generations. You know, that it wasn't just about me in this generation, that there was a connection to prior generations, a kind of a generational kind of passing down of patterns and habits. Seeing that was really helpful to feel like, yeah, it's not my fault this is happening. This is just conditions unfolding. And yet there is a way that we have to take responsibility for the continued unfolding of it. That's in this moment, the arising of these identities. And the taking responsibility is really being curious about the identities. And as we can begin to hold them with some compassion, it does become easier to investigate them, to be curious about them. So that is one side of it, that we can bring compassion to the investigation itself. And then also I've seen that the investigation of our identities can open us to compassion. So I want to give an example. And the way that I think this happens in general is that as we see and understand our identities as patterns and habits and how much suffering is created out of that, as we start to see that this unfolding being is following its conditioning, it kind of opens the mind to seeing or recognizing that everybody is in this same boat. We're all like tumbling on in these conditions. And there's a poignancy to that. It kind of almost breaks the heart in a way when we see that, when we see the amount of suffering that is happening as a result of these kind of constrictions that happen. So an example yesterday, here in the Bay Area, I know some of you aren't in the Bay Area in California, but here in the Bay Area, we've been having a really big heat wave, and on Sunday, a line of thunderstorms came through, and lightning kind of sparked hundreds and hundreds of wildfires throughout the state of California. And we are now in a pretty dire situation. Many people are having to evacuate, and the smoke is pretty bad. And I woke up yesterday morning, well, the night before, I had to close everything down because the smoke had gotten so bad. You just have to close all the windows. And there's a lot of heat. So, you know, the heat gets trapped inside. And so it was kind of miserable, you know, just basically pretty uncomfortable. And as I went to bed, it's like, well, maybe the wind will change in the morning and maybe it'll be okay. And I woke up yesterday morning, the wind hadn't changed. The air quality was really bad, and I had to stay closed up all day. And in that morning, as I was preparing breakfast, I was feeling really grinchy, I would say, you know, kind of grinchy. I was annoyed with the way things were going in the kitchen, and immediately it's like, okay, what's going on? You know, what's happening? And I immediately saw that it was connected with the conditions, the fire, the smoke, the heat, the challenge of all of that. And as I was seeing it, it was immediately clear that what the mind was rebelling against was the uncontrollability of the situation. that I didn't get to decide if I opened my windows and, you know, let the air blow through because it, you know, to cool off the house. I didn't get to do that because doing that would create conditions. I have some lung issues, so it would create conditions where I couldn't breathe and so I couldn't do that. So the uncontrollability both of my body and of the conditions of the smoke. Now, last time, I think one of the main threads I talked about in terms of selfing was this identification around control. You know, that when that sense of, we feel good when we're in control. You know, it's like that, when there's a sense of I can control what's happening, there's a sense of I know what to do. I know how to do it. I can do what makes me feel good. So there's that, there's a kind of a feeling of okayness and that comes when we have that control. But when that's pointed out to us that it's not, that it's kind of like an illusion almost of the control, then the mind gets frustrated and it kind of bumps up against. And I was pointing out last time that if you notice you're getting frustrated around things being out of control, right there, that's not self. You know, that's a teaching. That's a pointing to the exploration of not self. And so that was what arose in my mind yesterday morning as I was exploring. It's like, oh, right, this is not self. I don't get to choose this. This is just the conditions. There's the external conditions of the smoke and the fire. There's the internal, the conditions of the body. There's just all of this as conditions unfolding. And there's some suffering around it, the heat, the difficulty breathing. It was even a little bit difficult breathing in the house because you can't keep it perfectly sealed. And so there was suffering there. But as I explored this, you know, looked at this and kind of saw the not self nature of this just being conditions unfolding, my heart kind of opened to kind of not just my own personal conditions, my own body, my own like house with its, you know, leaky seals that let smoke in. It wasn't just about my own conditions. It's like, oh, there are people all over the world who have challenging conditions, who can't breathe or who are in pain or, and that just took my, you know, it expanded the sense of the compassion so broadly. And so this is another pointing to what happens as we begin to do this kind of exploration, as we explore our own identities, our own ways that we congeal around an I or a me or mine. That exploration can open us, it can break down the barriers between self and other. You know, that's another piece that actually I want to point to and probably talk about more next week or the following week maybe, that if there is a sense of others, you know, sometimes we kind of us and them, me and you, you know, if we find ourselves they and theming, you know, it's like we sometimes I, me and mine, you know, we sometimes have that running around in our mind. 95% of our thoughts seem to be related to I, me, mine. And then maybe the other 4.5% are related to they, them. That they, them is a form of selfing. It's an identification of other. So I sometimes call that othering. That's a phrase that some others have also used. This exploration around selfing. Also, we can begin to explore when we are othering, when we are creating identities for other people. That's when we're creating identities for other people. When we are they and theming, we are implicitly me and mining. So that's a way to begin to also see a different form of selfing. And so this exploration around self, around looking at the sense of self, exploring how selfing functions in our minds. It can open us to compassion. It can break down barriers between ourselves and others. Essentially, what I want to say here is that studying identities, studying this way that we self, is not selfish. You know, as I was thinking about talking about this tonight, I was really kind of connected to the larger suffering, particularly right around me, where within the space of, a radius of about 15 miles, there are multiple fires burning and people are evacuating. And I was just asking this question, you know, how does this teaching of not self, like, how does this connect to this whole thing? And it really struck me that the compassion that can come through investigating and exploring our own identities is a way to break down these barriers between self and others and open us to compassion. Exploring not self, exploring the teaching of not self, exploring our own identities in the process. And I think I've shared several times, I think, in this series, the famous Dogen quote, to study the way is to study the self. So that's what we're doing. We're studying the self. We're studying our identities. And then Dogen goes on, to study the self is to forget the self. Through studying the self, the mind begins to understand that it's not a thing, actually. That what we take to be self is a process. It's not something that's solid or stable. And as we begin to be curious about our identities, we start to see that. And as we, so to study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be awakened by all things. And so this study of our identities is a way that we're studying the self. What we're doing there is we're studying one of the deepest, one of the most foundational delusions in our minds that leads to suffering. Actions that arise out of this delusion are responsible for so much suffering in the world. Far-reaching consequences. Now, we may not every action out of a sense of self necessarily has those far-reaching consequences, but I think we can all think of certain situations or people or times where we have seen a sense of self creating far-reaching consequences. So it's not a small thing to do this kind of exploration. I'm saying this too because sometimes we think or we feel that the practice of looking inward, of exploring what's happening here, is somehow disconnected from the world. You know, that we're stepping out of the world or something to do that. In some ways, though, what we're doing is stepping into the world, because what we're seeing as we explore our own hearts and minds is a reflection of what's going on in others' hearts and minds. And that is where the compassion is born, is in seeing that similarity that we share with others. I have so much more to say about studying identities. Maybe that will be the topic for next week. we'll go into studying identities. I talked a little bit about, let's see if there's one piece I want to bring in just for today. I talked a little bit about those counterpoint identities. I talked about selfing and othering. just a little bit. Oh, here's a piece that I want to point to. Another way perhaps to come to the compassion piece as we're exploring our own identities. Often I think our senses of self are, or at least some of them, some number of our senses of self, because we all have many, many senses of self. This is actually some part, a part that we get to see as we start to look at our identities, and a part that begins to undermine our belief that any one of them is kind of the stable, solid self, because we begin to see, we look at this one for a little while, and then it's like, oh yeah, that's me. And then suddenly another one pops in, and it's like, wow, that one doesn't have much to do with this one. So there's kind of this recognition that they're just these things that we adopt, these stances. They're like stances we adopt. And some of those stances, some of those identities that we adopt have been created as strategies for taking care of ourselves. No, they're those strategies that we learned when we were kids about how to navigate our families and our you know, school grounds. And they're strategies that potentially have kept us safe. They're strategies that have navigated us through perhaps even threatening or dangerous times in our lives. And so they may have been, you know, the only way for us to survive some of those strategies. And so sometimes we can bow to them and say, you know, thank you for getting me here. And now let's take a look at whether it's still necessary. So I want to leave a little bit of time at least for some comments and questions. And I would like to record the comments. So just to know that I will record. You're welcome to type into the chat box if you'd prefer not to have your voice recorded. But I'm also happy to take questions live in the chat box, however you want. Yeah, Joe.
So sometimes when awareness is clear and I'm kind of coasting in it, I find myself starting to struggle with the awareness because I don't have a clear identity. It's kind of a panic. And so I start struggling to form an identity, which creates suffering. And so then I try to form an identity that doesn't try to form an identity. And the only thing I can really do is just kind of write it out. And if I write it out, then awareness sees what's happening, and then there's wisdom about it. And it just kind of resolves itself. But identity is like addictive.
It is. It absolutely is. And so one thing, you know, just you described a process that, you know, I think does happen at times, that, you know, when we come to a place where there's more, or where there's less of a sense of self. You know, so this is a, you know, it's unfamiliar, let's say. It's a little bit maybe ungrounded. It feels a little wobbly. It feels like we don't have an orientation that we're used to. You know, so that's where the discomfort comes from. You know, it's that unfamiliarity with the experience, the sense of like a little bit of ungroundedness. And so that's that's a place that I think, you know, so, and so your reaction, so you noticed the, did you say anxiety?
It's just kind of a thrashing.
A thrashing. Okay.
I need to get control back. I need to form an identity. I need to.
Okay, so there's a feeling of uncontrollability as well then. Yeah. So I think that's a place to, you know, just explore that, you know, so you're noticing the thrashing, you're noticing the lack of control. You know, sometimes you can actually step more into that vulnerability. That's truth. You know, sometimes a wisdom reflection in that place of like, yes, this is true. This is the uncontrollable is true. You know, that's the nature of a deeper kind of nature of experience. And so sometimes a wisdom reflection there might help the mind to hold that, maybe hold the thrashing a little bit, the feeling of discomfort around the uncontrollability. So if you can kind of recognize, okay, there's uncontrollability and there's discomfort with it. You might be able to land there for a little while, but the pattern or the habit of trying to form a sense of self, like there's got to be somewhere I can land. There's got to be something I can hang on to. Yeah. I have watched this pattern many times and sometimes that's what you do just get to watch it, you know, and rather than trying to stop it, because, you know, we can't stop it. It's the habit, you know. Sometimes we can be aware of the whole vulnerability piece, and there can be a kind of a hanging in that space, in the discomfort of that space, hovering there, and we can maybe watch the sense of self kind of want to emerge and not quite fully form. So you can play with that, but mostly what I will encourage is just exactly what you did. You know, it's like, yeah, watch it unfold.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. And this is not an uncommon thing, you know, to happen in the course of practice. It's like an edge of the practice. When we come up to that place where we're hanging out in that place where there's not so much sense of self, it feels really disorienting. And it's kind of like the mind has to adjust to that disorientation. Yeah.
Thanks, Andrea.
Yeah, thanks. Anyone else want to? Jill. Yeah, Jill.
I don't know if it's helpful, but ditto, Joe. I have a different set. Mine kind of goes into confusion, and then the thrashing, it's just a perfect word. And I'm not meaning to wallow in it, just that it's kind of helpful to hear that it's a part of the process. I have a sense that wisdom mind is in there somewhere, because I have a sense that it's just where I should hang.
Absolutely. And sometimes the thrashing is around trying to figure out, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, so there's a little bit of thrashing around us, the practice, like the identity of the practice. I'm supposed to be able to look at this in a certain way. And if it can be held in the sense of, oh, this is just part of the practice unfolding, sometimes the mind doesn't have to thrash around it. It's just like, oh yeah, you get to this place and it feels uncomfortable and you want to not have that. So there's the tension and tightness. But sometimes the thrashing is kind of more connected to trying to figure out how to be mindful of this in some way. and maybe you can just let that part go. You know, sometimes the wisdom reflection of, this is just the path. This happens on the path, that can create conditions that allow there to be a little less thrashing in that scenario. Yeah. And it's time to stop now, unfortunately. But I'm happy to hang out for a couple minutes.